But if you see the true and firstborn offspring of Egypt perishing, Exodus 11:5, desire, pleasure, grief, fear, wrongdoing, folly, licentiousness, and all that is akin and related to these, be struck with awe and be still, cowering before the fearsome might of God. For not even a dog, he says, shall growl with its tongue from man to beast, Exodus 11:7, which is equivalent to saying that neither the dog-like tongue that barks and shrieks, nor the human within us, the ruling mind, nor the beast-like creature sense perception should exult when the entire outward alliance on our behalf, unbidden, comes to shield us once the opposing power has been destroyed. But many occasions arise that do not suit silence, but instead call for speech set down in words. Of these, two memorials can be found laid up. How so? Has someone come to share in some good beyond expectation? It is good to give thanks and to him the one who sent it. What then is the good? Has the passion that assails us died and been cast down flat, unburied? Let us not delay then, but form a chorus and sing a most sacred hymn, urging all to say, let us sing to the Lord, for he is gloriously glorified. Horse and rider he has thrown into the sea, Exodus 15:1. But while the destruction and removal of the passion is a good, it is not the perfect good. The discovery of wisdom is a surpassing beauty. When it has been found, the whole people will sing, not in one mode of music only, but in every one of its harmonies and melodies. For it says, then Israel sang this song at the well, Num. 21:17, meaning, at the spring that lay hidden but was sought out again and in the end found, the deep knowledge whose nature it is, by law, to irrigate the rational fields in the souls of those who love contemplation. What then? When we gather in the genuine fruit of the mind, does the sacred word not command us, as if bringing it in a basket, Deut. 26:2-4, to offer to reason the first fruits of the abundant yield of all the good things the soul has flowered, budded, and borne fruit in, showing them openly and proclaiming, in praise of the God who brings all to completion, I have cleared the sacred things out of my house, Ibid. 13, and I have stored them in the house of God, setting over them as stewards and guardians those chosen by merit for the sacred service. These are the Levites, the resident aliens, the orphans, and the widows, Ibid. The Levites as suppliants, the aliens as migrants, and the others as those bereft of birth and widowed of it, who have inscribed God as the true husband and father of the soul that serves him. This, then, is the most fitting manner both of speaking and of keeping silence. The worthless have practiced the opposite. They have become zealots of a silence that deserves blame and of speech that deserves censure, each cultivated to their own ruin and to the ruin of others. The greater part of their training lies in saying what ought not to be said. Opening their mouths and letting them go unbridled, they release, like an unchecked torrent, speech that runs on without judgment, as the poets say, dragging along with it countless things of no profit. And so some have turned to plead the cause of pleasure and desire and every excessive impulse, fortifying the irrational passion as a stronghold against reason its ruler, and have stripped for the contest, grappling as well in quarrelsome disputes, hoping to blind the seeing race and to hurl it down cliffs and chasms from which it could never rise again. Some have made themselves adversaries not only of human virtue, but of the divine as well, to such a pitch of madness did they drive. Now the leader of the passion-loving band is recorded as the king of the land of Egypt, Pharaoh, for it is said to the prophet, see, he is going out to the water, and you shall stand to meet him at the lip of the river, Exod 7:15. For it is characteristic of him always to go out toward the rush and overflow of irrational passion. But it is characteristic of the wise man to meet the flood of arguments urged in favor of pleasure and desire, not with his feet, but with his judgment, firmly and without wavering, at the river's lip, that is, at the mouth and the tongue, which are the instruments of speech. Standing firmly upon these, he will be able to overturn and cast down the persuasions that plead the cause of passion. The enemy of the seeing race is Pharaoh's people, who did not cease attacking and pursuing and enslaving virtue, and who found a fitting recompense for the evils they inflicted. They were engulfed in a sea of wrongdoings and in the towering waves that the raging passion had stirred up, so that moment brought a spectacle beyond compare, a victory with no rival, and a joy greater than any hope. Hence it is said, Israel saw the Egyptians dead at the lip of the sea, Exod 14:30. Great indeed is the hand that fights on our behalf. compelling those who had sharpened these instruments, mouth, lips, and speech, against the truth to fall by mouth, by lips, and by speech, so that those who took them up against others might die not by foreign weapons, but by their own. It brings the soul three most beautiful pieces of good news. First, the destruction of the Egyptian passions. Second, that this did not happen in some other place, but at the lips of the salty and bitter spring, a kind of sea, through which the sophistic reasoning hostile to virtue had poured forth. And last, the sight of the fallen bodies. For nothing invisible could be beautiful, but what is fine should be brought forward into the bright sunlight, while evil, on the contrary, deserves to be thrust into deep darkness. And may it never even be seen by chance, while the good is always surveyed with greater eyes. What is so good as to live the beautiful, and to see the base put to death? There were three, then, who stretched the cleverness of their arguments up to heaven. These practiced their art against nature, or rather against their own soul, declaring that only this sensible and visible world exists, that it was never brought into being and will never be destroyed, but is ungenerated, indestructible, without overseer, without pilot, without any ruling providence. Then, piling argument upon argument, they raised up their disreputable doctrine to a height, like a tower. For it is said, the whole earth was one lip, Gen 11, 1, a harmony of all the parts of the soul that was, in fact, discordant, aimed at unsettling the most sovereign principle among the things that are, the first cause. And so, when they hoped to run up to heaven itself by their inventions in order to overthrow the eternal kingdom, the great and undethronable hand cast them down and overturned along with them the doctrine they had built. The place is called Confusion, a name fitting the newly devised presumption. For what is more confounding than anarchy? Do not households without a governing head become full of collisions and turmoil? Do not cities left kingless, given over to mob rule, the greatest and most opposite evil perish? And have not lands, nations, and regions of the earth, once their governments were dissolved, thrown away ancient and great prosperity? What need is there to speak of merely human affairs? For not even the other herds of living creatures, of birds, of land animals, of creatures in the water, hold together without some leader of the herd, but they always long for and attend upon their own leader as the sole cause of their good, and in his absence they scatter and perish. Do we then suppose that for earthly things, the smallest portion of the universe, government, is the cause of good and lack of government the cause of evil, but that the cosmos is not filled with the utmost happiness because of the leadership of God who reigns as king? So they are given a fitting penalty for what they set up. Having thrown the sacred realm into confusion through their anarchy, they themselves came to see it, confounded, not confounders. And even before they had yet paid the penalty, puffed up by their derangement of mind, they overthrow the rule of the universe with impious arguments, register themselves instead as rulers and kings, and fasten the undethronable power of God upon a coming to be that is ceaselessly perishing and decaying. Playing the tragedian and boasting, these laughable men are accustomed to say things like this: "We are the leaders, we hold the power, on us everything depends. Who is the cause of good things and their opposites, if not we? To whom does well-being most truly belong, if not to us?" And equally foolish are those who say that everything hangs from some invisible power, which they suppose presides over human and divine affairs throughout the world. Having boasted so arrogantly, if they sober up as though from drunkenness and come to themselves, and, coming to a sense of the drunken folly in which they indulged, feel shame and reproach themselves for the offenses into which their thoughtless judgment led them, taking as their counselor a repentance that flatters no one and takes no bribes, and propitiating the gracious power of the one who is with recantations offered in place of their profane songs, now made sacred, they will find complete amnesty. But if, remaining stiff-necked and unbroken to the end, they leap about as though self-governing, free, and leaders of others, they will learn, by inexorable and uncompromising necessity, their own nothingness in all things, small and great alike. For the charioteer who has mounted this cosmos as though it were a winged chariot, casting on the bridle, drawing back with force the reins that had gone slack, and tightening the muzzles, will by whip and goad remind them of the master's authority, which they had forgotten because of the kindness and gentleness of the ruler, like bad slaves. for by turning the mildness of their masters into an occasion for anarchy, they put on a display of having no master at all, until the one who owns them, applying punishments instead of medicines, checks their flowing and abundant disease. This is why it is said, "A lawless soul, one that opens its lips to do evil or to do well, shall afterward confess its sin." Lev. 5:4. What do you say, soul so full of pretension? Do you actually know what is truly good, or noble, or just, or holy, or which things fit with which? The knowledge and the power over these things belong to God alone, and to anyone who is his friend. Witness also the oracle in which it is said, "I will kill and I will make alive, I will strike and I will heal." Deut. 32:39. But the soul that only seems wise did not hold even a superficial dreaming about things beyond itself. Rather, this unfortunate soul was so puffed up with empty wind that it even took an oath that the things it had falsely supposed stood firm and fixed. If then the throbbing and boiling of the disease begins to relax, the embers of health, gradually kindled again, will compel it first to confess its fault, which is to blame itself, and then to become a suppliant at the altars, imploring with prayers, supplications, and sacrifices, by which alone it is possible to obtain forgetfulness of wrongs. Next, one might reasonably raise the question why it is that Scripture records only the river in Egypt as having lips, but no longer does so for the Euphrates or any of the other sacred rivers. For where it says, "You shall stand to meet him by the lip of the river," Exod. 7:15. And yet some, perhaps mocking, will say that such things ought not to be brought into our inquiries, since they display pettiness of speech rather than any benefit. But I suppose that such details have been seasoned into the sacred writings, like spices, for the improvement of those who read them, and no one who inquires into them should be condemned for excessive word-hunting. Rather, the opposite, idleness, should be condemned in those who do not inquire. For our present concern is not really a study about rivers, but about lives that are compared to the streams of rivers, opposed to one another. For the life of the worthy person is seen in deeds, while the account of the worthless person is seen in words, and account belongs to tongue, mouth, and lips, and to